You are listening to The Link, an interactive podcast hosted by public policy experts at the U.S. Oncology Network. Your link to the policy that matters most.
Good morning and welcome to The Link podcast, linking physicians to policy. We are coming to you live from sunny Orlando, Florida, here at the Community Oncology Alliance Conference, where it's we're now in day two of a great conference with tons of energy and lots of great panels, a lot of great discussion. And right now I'm actually joined by someone who just came from the main stage, our leader, Ben Jones, and then Dr. Chasky from Pennsylvania. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I know it's been a whirlwind already, and I know we're wrapping up day two really quickly now. But Dr. Chasky, how's everything been going for you and COA? And I know you've been the co-chair for this year, and how's that been?
I think it's been a really great conference so far. Was honored to start off the conference with sort of a memorial to my partner that just passed away, Dr. James Perry. And he died of pancreatic cancer after fighting the disease for 2.5 years, was a COA board member, and really was a staunch advocate for community independent oncology. So independent community oncologists. And he believed in it so much that, and I talked about this on the panel, that his first call was to us, and he had resources to go anywhere in the world. But at the end of the day, he wanted to be cared for, and he knew that he would get the best care in our practice. So he believed in it through and through, even when he needed it at the end.
Yeah.
So he knew that for his illness, you could go to an academic center and you could hear about survival curves and this and that, but he could hear the same thing in our practice. And he knew all the survival curves and he knew the drugs. That's the easy part. But what I talked about yesterday, he truly believed in care for patients. And that's what we deliver in the community. So I thought that was a good way of starting things out yesterday. And then we basically had the session on hospital friend or foe, which is a complex relationship where it is no longer a checker game. It's really a chess game with the hospital. And one side of the hospital can be your friend, and then some administrators really want to completely crush your practice and direct self-referrals. And we told the story of our practice, which we told last year, but repeating it again this year.
You know, Moshe, I know you and the planning committee had a lot on your plate. You put together a fantastic agenda. But two things that I thought were great. One, thank you for sharing that experience with your colleague. I think that was probably the best way to open this conference. Not only was it out of respect, but it was also something that you could see like had a wave of inspiration in the crowd. Like they wanted to have that purpose for being here, and you really did. You provided that. So thank you. And then it was also fantastic that you were able to prioritize that session to be one of the first or the first general session of the conference this year to determine whether or not, or just to have a conversation about hospitals and how they could be either a friend or a foe or both a friend or a foe.
Yeah.
What was your principal takeaway from the session?
My principal takeaway from the session is that we need to continue to focus. And this is what I talked about last year, is to continue to focus on our mission. And I told a story last year about this bagel guy in my neighborhood. And I think that resonated last year, and it resonated again this year because it shows a point. And sometimes stories just illustrate a point very, very clearly. And what I said was that when I was in the throes of basically a controversial relationship with the hospital, and the hospital was evicting us, and they were directing referrals only at the they were directing referrals to only their own medical oncologists. And then July 31st, 2023, they sent us a letter that they were closing medical oncology. And they don't close infectious disease or endocrinology. They specifically closed medical oncology because of the fact that 340B is driving this. They don't care about the other specialties as much, but 340B really drives their finances in the hospital. And frankly, they want to profiteer on this.
Yeah.
And I told the story about this bagel guy who lives in my neighborhood, who is in my neighborhood. He's in West Philadelphia in a place called Overbrook. And it's sort of this hole in the wall bagel shop. And several years ago, there was a well-off businessman in my neighborhood that decided that he wanted a bagel shop in the neighborhood, closer to him, not a few miles away, but closer to him on a beautiful avenue with a beautiful building. And he started building it because money was no object. And he builds this beautiful bagel place. And I went to Nick. I call him Nick the Bagel Guy. And I said, Nick, I said, I know you're going to think that this is a strange question, but I need to know, do you think you're going to survive this? Because my situation is very similar to yours. You're going up against a very well-off businessman that's going to build a nicer bagel shop on a nicer avenue. And do you think you're going to be able to survive it? You're my canary in the coal mine, because I myself am going up against a multi-billion dollar hospital that's pulling out everything that they have in order to crush me. And do you think that you're going to survive? And he said to me, and I'll never forget this, he said, Moshe, I will survive this because I make the best bagel. That guy who's a well-off businessman, he may know how to build a building. He may know how to get the real estate on the best avenue. He may know how to hire some good employees, but he won't know how to make the bagel. And if I focus on continuing to make the very best bagel, I will be the one to survive. And P.S., within a year of opening the bagels, of the well-off businessman opening the bagel shop, it closed because the well-off businessman, he got tired of losing so much money to Nick the Bagel Guy. At first, people switched the business to the nicer place, but he couldn't compete with the product. And I think that's a great example of what we have in independent community oncology. We have skin in the game. We know what we do well. We know what we don't do well. What we do well is taking care of patients. And that comes back to my partner. He knew that we would take care of him through everything. Through the better times of the illness, through the much tougher times of the illness, we weren't just going to be there to give the chemotherapy or immunotherapy or whatever it is. At the end of the day, we're there to actually take care of the patient. And through our whole fight with Jefferson over the last few years, and even after July 31st, when they basically restricted oncology privileges to only their oncology group, we continue to go into the hospital. We continue to see our patients through internal medicine privileges. We're not allowed to write on the charts, which is, frankly, it goes against ethics to understand how they think that would be better patient care.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we continue to take care of these patients, and we have figured out workarounds for it. And the community continues to support us because we have a tenacity that it's about the altruism part, which we want to take care of patients, but it's also our reputation on the line, because this is not the sign on the door is not US Oncology. Yes, the sign on the door for our practice is Alliance Cancer Specialist. But when you're an independent community oncology group, it's your reputation on the line. And you're the one that needs to have that reputation. And the way you win is you continue to have tenacity. And I think the way you win against the hospitals is you continue to do the work that we do and only we do. And people know it. And the patients find our front door to come first for treatment.
That's right. You continue to have the better bagel.
Yeah,
correct.
So we jumped right in. Can you give us a little background on Alliance? Give us a rundown of your practice. And I think most of the listeners recall the situation that you're in with Jefferson. I think we've had a prior podcast on it, but maybe a high level overview of where things have evolved since last year.
So when things started getting difficult with the hospital back in, I would say really difficult back in 2020, when they evicted us from our building and we built a beautiful cancer center and we were still on equal footing from a referral standpoint with the hospital. And we basically continued to see our own patients and we would get new referrals in the hospital, but the hospital didn't like that we were getting more of the referrals. And first they started with guilt trips to the hospitalists, but then they got even more aggressive. And when our lawyers sort of poked the bear, you could say, and sent them letters that this is wrong, and in basically was very questionable from a legal standpoint that they could force referrals, when in physicians' judgment, the better physician was us, they basically responded and said, okay, hospitalist, you could refer to whoever you want, but we're going to make you fill out a form. And on this form, if you refer to the private group, you're going to have to justify why you did. So it was clearly intimidation. There were doctors whose salaries got docked for this.
Whoa.
And what I've learned in retrospect is that, and I said this yesterday, just because something is evil doesn't make it illegal, and that the laws and policy haven't necessarily caught up to this yet. And this is why, you know, people like you, Ben, continue to fight the fight that you do so that we could bend these laws that are closer to ethics. Because I think from an objective standpoint, there is no way that anyone would look at our situation and say what the hospital did was clearly wrong on this. July 31st, 2023, the hospital then took to an even more egregious action, not allowing us to see our own patients in the hospital. And that's where we thought that it crossed ethical lines. We hired a legal firm, and in September, we tried to get a temporary restraining order to allow us to continue to see our own patients in the hospital. And the judge said no. And the reason she said no was she said, looking at this case and listening to these doctors, this is going to be terrible for the community and terrible for patients. But who am I but a judge? I am not a physician. And physicians basically have to police themselves. And if a physician committee came out and said that this is the right thing in name of continuity of care, then we have to let it go, because what you brought is an antitrust case, and an antitrust case is about irreparable harm and geographic analysis, something that would have cost us millions of dollars, a very difficult case for a physician group to win. So she kept the case open until we brought something further. And then we got another legal standpoint that said really going down this route is not the right way to go. And we moved it over to the state, and figuring out how to handle it from the state level at this point. But at the end of the day, it comes back to Nick the Bagel. We continue to focus on making great bagels. We continue to focus on giving great patient care. And to me, that's the best way. That's the best revenge that I could have. Not that I want revenge on the hospital. I really would love for them to come back and say, let's work together. Let's figure out a way that we could take better care of our community. And one of the ways we beat the hospital is that their, and I said this story yesterday, is that their head doesn't necessarily communicate with their hands, because these are huge systems. It's sort of like a David versus Goliath. And I said yesterday that I got a letter from the hospital a few weeks ago, which people laughed at, saying, and this is after having podcasts against the hospital, going to federal court against the hospital, having obviously a very difficult relationship with the hospital over the last 6 months. They sent me a letter. Dear Dr. Chasky, we think you'd be the perfect physician, you know, after to be part of our malignant and benign hematology practice in one of our Jefferson locations. And to me, it just shows that our relationship with the physicians, with the nurses, the maintenance staff, the people that work in the cafeteria in the hospital, they know who the quality doctors are. And we believe that if we continue to focus on quality, we will continue to succeed. We just hired, I talked about yesterday, a GYN oncologist in Mark Shaheen, who's incredibly talented. And we're going to start developing our surgical department. And we've had other hospitals in the area that have actually come forward and wanted to work with us. So this answer coming full circle to what we talked about, friend versus foe, you have us that even within Jefferson, we have many friends within Jefferson. There's people up top that are looking at it only from a business standpoint, not from the patient standpoint, that don't see it our way. But most people do see it our way, even within Jefferson. And then certainly within the other healthcare systems, the Trinity Healths of the world and the University of Pennsylvania and Temple Fox Chase, they want to figure out ways to work with us at this point. I don't think there are many hospitals that would want to be what Jefferson has become in Philadelphia, sort of ground zero, one of the most egregious actions that a hospital has ever taken on an oncology practice, which is hurting their own community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's astonishing for all the reasons that you just walked through. I am extremely glad to hear that Alliance remains strong because you continued to make the better bagel. And I completely agree with you that it's not the physicians, it's not the doctors at the hospital, it's not the clinicians. That's not the problem. It is somebody looking at this through the lens of a profit loss statement, and they are trying to figure out how they can increase the profits.
Correct.
And that is all it is, even if that disrupts patient care. And the most frustrating thing is that everything that they're doing as a result of that worldview is impacting patients, and it is truly disrupting care, and it is just not right. But by gosh, they figured out a way where even though it's not right, it's legal. Yeah. And that's what is so frustrating. And my question is this. I know you've had a number of lawyers look at this. I know they were looking at this from a antitrust, anti-kickback. Are these providers being paid above fair market value because they're receiving higher reimbursements, because they're receiving 340B discounts, as giving the hospital an advantage? Is that element of it ever coming back into play? Because I think that is where, from a government affairs, a public policy perspective, that's where I say, wait a second, did we get this right? You have created all of these incentives that hospitals can have access to, whether it be drug discounts, whether it be higher reimbursements, whether it be tax breaks, uncollectible bad debt reimbursement, the list goes on. You can accept charitable contributions. You've got all of these benefits. Was it the intention to give hospitals all of these benefits and have them in turn use that as a way to disrupt patient care? And by the way, charge them twice as much for doing it.
Right. It's astonishing.
It's astonishing. Has that element come back up in any of the legal conversations?
It has, but I think it's very difficult to win that argument right now with where the laws are at the present time. I think Farrakh Vassman, who's my current lawyer, and I would actually highly recommend from Blank Rome, and I say this because I think he's been completely honest through the process of what he sees that we can win, where the pressure points of a hospital are and where we don't have it right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, to continue down the line as an independent practice, you know, for an antitrust suit that's going to cost possibly over $10 million. And at the end of the day, not win, we can't do it. We can't do it as a practice. But there are other And he talked about this yesterday, that every hospital, basically CEO, looks at their hospital as, we're going to make money on brains, hearts, bones, and cancer. And it is crazy that it's come to that point, they'll lose money on everything else, or we're just going to make money on this. And, oh, by the way, when it comes to cancer, we don't care so much about the community. We care about this actually paying for everything else in the hospital. And we're going to do everything we can to crush any outside competition, even if we promise that we support independent doctors. Yeah, we support independent doctors, but not oncologists, because there's 340B and we need to own that.
Yep.
So there are other places where, you know, you could look, and Barack talked about this yesterday, state level, Secretary of Health, Attorney Generals, things on that level. We're exploring all of these options right now, which I can't get into right now, but at the end of the day, like you said, we continue to fight the fight on the ground.
You know, and he also had another really good recommendation. And that recommendation was to make sure that the hospital boards know what's going on. Because so often this is being made from the hospital executive perspective, just on a numbers game. But the board of those local hospitals, they don't know what's going on. And I think it was a really good point that he brought up, which is to say, just make sure they know. Just make sure they understand what's going on, because they actually might have an issue with this. And I don't know if that's something. Have you all engaged their board?
We have. But unfortunately, the board didn't have much power.
Oh, gotcha.
There were definitely some voices that we've heard on the medical staff that were clearly very unhappy about this. But, and there was actually even a petition that went out, I will say, during 4-hour court case. And there were many doctors that signed it. We had over 100 physicians that signed it, that they felt that it was egregious, that we weren't going to be able to see our own patients, that it was going to impair medical care. But then there were other doctors that were just afraid of the blowback from the hospital. And That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame. And there is this intimidation that the person that's writing, they're writing their paycheck, and they're very concerned, very worried, afraid of going up against the hospital or signing a document that in any way could hurt their job.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Chasky, for joining us and for giving us that update. I know that's really frustrating with everything going on, but we really enjoy working with you and your team at Alliance, and we hope we can continue, you know, continuing the fight, making the bagels, and making sure that most importantly, the patients are able to get their bagels, because I think that's a thing that is often forgotten, is that the patients don't really see all this happening in the background, and they're the ones who are the ones that impacted the most.
Yeah, agree.
Vino, I ended the conference today, or when we spoke today, this morning, the co-chairs opened up the conference this morning, and I opened up the conference on a very positive note. And what I said was that I went to one of the lectures yesterday on circulating tumor DNA. There's a lecture today on bispecifics, and it made me think about and reflect on how far we have came. And what I told them was the story. I said, and I think the stories could be powerful, that for the last couple of years, I've actually been looking for a textbook on Harrison's internal medicine. Tinsley Harrison wrote and edited much of the of Harrison's internal medicine. It was first published in 1950, and he actually said that he had his steepest learning curve as a private internal medicine doctor. And I always felt that that book caused the metamorphosis of me thinking like just a regular guy into thinking when I hear problems as a physician. It went through how you listen to a patient, how you do a physical exam on a patient. And because of that, I guess for nostalgic reasons, I always wanted to own a first edition copy of Harrison's Internal Medicine. And I said that I was looking for this book and I found it a year ago on eBay. I was not able to find it in any in any bookstores, even bookstores that have used books, wasn't able to find it anywhere. And I found it online on eBay for $2,000. And I was saying that I was embarrassed to put a $2,000 book on my credit card because my wife takes care of our finances. And and she'd look at me like I'm crazy. Like, what, really? $2,000 for a book that's going to go in the trash after you're 120 years old? Like, really? can you buy something that's more useful? So a few weeks ago, this is about a month ago, the book dropped to a $1,250 and then it dropped to $750 on eBay. I'm like, oh my God, this guy wants to sell. So I went and bought the book. I offered $350 and he's like, yeah, you can have it for $350.
Nice.
So I get the book for $350 and I'm looking through this book from 1950 and reflecting on where we are right now. And this book is basically, it's thousands of pages from 1950. And these doctors were great doctors. They'd go into a room, they'd listen to a patient, they'd do physical exam. They would have to spend so much time to understand what we could understand, looking, probably paging through a patient's chart in less than a minute. Literally, it would take them hours to get to. And even with that, they would be so jealous, a guy like Tinsley Harrison, to know that we have bispecifics out there and immunotherapies out there and actionable mutations out there where we can target drugs to a specific mutation. And here we are, yes, on the one hand, we have difficult fights that we have on the policy front, but oh my God, where we've come in medicine and how we have succeeded and how our practice has continued to succeed despite everything going on, it gives you perspective. And what I said was, and I often say this at ASCO, and COA has done a good job of this, is standing up for the pharmaceutical companies with the Inflation Reduction Act, that the reason we are where we are right now is not that I am a better doctor than Tinsley Harrison, but I could help patients a lot more than Tinsley Harrison or any of my predecessor oncologists that were in the 80s, the 90s, even the 2000s. In the last 10 years, I would tell them that I have patients with stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer that are living more than 5 years because of immunotherapy, they would look at me like I had two heads. So the reason we're here right now is not that I'm a better doctor, but we have better drugs out there. And we do need to continue to advocate for that.
Yeah.
And that would be a podcast on its own.
I was going to say,
we already need to do an episode for that.
Would love to have you back for a podcast, an episode, and really focused on the potential pitfalls of IRA, because it passed 2 years ago. There was a lot of concern, a lot of pushback, but the implementation timeline is such that Part B is not going to be impacted truly until 2028. And I think when folks hear that date, it's almost like, okay, let me focus on something else. We have got a big problem with the IRA and the impact that that's going to have on research and development investment from manufacturers. If a product is eligible for negotiation after a set period of time, they're going to be in a really tough position to invest in R&D midway through a product's launch.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to hurt. It's either going to hurt patient access to these novel therapies because they might hold until they get a broader set of indications.
Absolutely.
Or they just don't have any more indications because they're like, why am I spending money on R&D when I've only got 2 more years of the product? And by the way, I can't raise the cost to cover these costs because there's an inflationary penalty also.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I've spoken about the IRA, and oh, by the way, 340B has a big impact on this also because it's raising the cost of drugs on the other front. But definitely another podcast, and I think let's get into that.
I love it.
Another time.
Well, thank you so much to both of you, Ben and Dr. Chasky, and thank you guys so much. And really was a good conference, I think. It was really successful. I think a lot of us have come away with a lot of information. And I think also just being able to network with everybody. I mean, as you can hear in the room right now, a lot of people are right now networking and meeting with each other. So thank you so much, Dr. Chasky, for all your work as a co-chair and for making a really great agenda this year and for all your work. And hopefully we can catch up soon and do another podcast.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thank you all. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the Link Podcast, your link to the legislature. For more information on healthcare policy and the U.S. Oncology Network, visit www.legislink.com.